Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the CDOT Show. We are coming to you live from Motor Pub in lovely Over the Rhine, downtown Cincinnati. I was off last month. I'm happy to be back. Thanks to Paul Danner Jr. for sitting in and filling in very nicely for me last month. But I am happy to be back. This is the CDOT Show, presented by Enquirer Sports, sponsored by Cincy Shirts, where you can get awesome Cincinnati-themed T-shirts, including some sweet new Joey Votto Foundation shirts. Portions of those proceeds do go to the Votto Foundation, and you can save 20% on your order by entering promo code CDOT when you check out. I'm joined, as per usual, by the star and my co-host of this show, Trent Rosecrans. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. Glad to be here. Glad everybody who did show up. We weren't supposed to be going opposite a Cincinnati Reds game because that would be poor planning.
Right.
But there was rain.
There
was rain last night, and although our scheduled guest, and I'm not downplaying our guest, we got a great guest for you. Our scheduled guest was a player who doesn't play, so he actually had less to do with the game than our real guest, probably. But it's just poor form when you can't show up in a uniform if you don't at home games. So our guest tonight is Reds, and I brought this along just because I always forget your title, because it's very impressive title. This is Dick Williams, the Reds' vice president of baseball operations, which, well, Dick, what does that
Welcome
mean?
Welcome to the show, Dick Williams. Welcome him.
Hold on. I want to start with a question. I want to know what took you so long. I counted today. You're on your eighth show, and you had a cancellation tonight. So that means I'm ninth on the bench, at least, to get invited to this show.
Want to think you were ninth, that's great.
You know what? I took a look at the list of guests that have preceded me, and I understand fully. You've had a great list of guests here tonight. A lot of guys that can talk baseball. So I'll see if I can hold my own. My title?
What does that mean?
You know what? People ask all the time about titles in our business and roles, and we are a very collaborative group, you know, those of us that work with Walt Jocketty. And the lines do blur together. We have responsibility over player development, amateur scouting, pro scouting, the administration of the major league team, the international operations, the spring training operations. But we have very capable people that are running all of those groups. And then here in Cincinnati, we have a team, and you've had a bunch of them here. Jeff Groppi, Sam Grossman, Bob Miller. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Nick Kroll, Rob Coughlin, Eric Lee. These guys are all part of a group that really, we collaborate, we talk about a lot of stuff. If there's a player move, if there's a contract that we're thinking about a trade, you know, we all work on it together. My title hasn't changed since I started with the Reds in 06, but my duties have evolved. So
that's interesting.
We just sort of left the title the same.
So do you do more than you did then?
No, the goal is to do less over time, Trent, right? If you manage yourself properly. No, we do. We're more efficient. Which is the goal, and we have a better support staff. When I got here, we were really thinly staffed. We've added a few guys, and they're really smart, and so it has enabled us to do a lot more. And when your bosses figure out that you can provide more information, then they request more information and let there be light. So we are doing a lot more now. It's a round-the-clock job. That's why my wife is here, because it's the only way we get to spend time together is if she accompanies me from time to time.
And Heather, I apologize once again for that.
So if all those people are involved in a trade in some facet, how does a trade come about? Do you have meetings where you go, I think we could get this guy for these people, or does that all start with Walt, who has ideas? Or if a trade happens between player A and player B, you know, how does that evolve? What's the process like?
You know, that's a great question. It's typically a trade evolves out of a situation of need on one team or the other. And when a team finds itself in a place of need, they'll start to reach out to other teams. It might be a general manager call, but it might also be scout to scout. So sitting in the stands tonight over at the ballpark, you know, there's scouts from five or six different teams. They're, you know, they're informally sort of feeling each other out on a lot of stuff. Those guys report back up the chain. What they hear as they're sitting around the ballpark, the coaches on the field, the players, you know, before and after games, you know, ideas, they come from the strangest of places. But that's one of the things that's fun about our job is we do, just like all the fans in the room, we sit around during the day and we say, hey, you know what? There's a team that just lost their starting pitcher. What do you think they would give us, you know, if we were able to give them someone that fills that need? And we'll kick it around amongst ourselves, you know, all afternoon. And then when Walt gets there, we'll say, hey, what about this? And he'll, you know, shoot it down or maybe make a phone call, depending on his mood. But that's, you know, they come, the ideas come from all over.
That's very cool.
So, like, you have, you know, I get all these fake trade proposals on Twitter. And that's kind of like what you guys do in that room?
The eye rolling that you give when you get those on Twitter is the same eye rolling that Walt gives us sometimes when we come up with ideas. But I'll tell you, we've made trades in the past that we didn't think were going to happen. And it never hurts to ask because you find out that different people value players differently. And that's why there's a market out there, and that's where the deal is to be made. I don't care who the player is, how good they are. We may all agree that he's good, but we may not agree on the salary he's being paid.
Right.
Yeah. Or we may agree on the salary he's being paid, but we may not agree on how good he is.
Sure.
And so there is a market out there for most players, and it's a pretty liquid one.
Now, let's say you have a need. Do you approach a team for a specific player, or do you say, we've got this guy, you know, what are you willing to give us for them?
Yeah, you know, it depends. The conversations don't last long if you don't approach it in a realistic manner.
Right.
And if you're not fair in your proposals, right? I mean, you know, that's happens to all of us in our everyday business life. But we have scouts that are responsible for different teams around the league. And so they may have three teams, they may have five teams, an organization. And so they'll have the major league team and the minor league. They'll watch the minor leagues as well, and they will sort of have a very good idea of what that organization thinks of their players based on their movement up through the minor leagues. They'll have their own internal ranking of these guys, and when we target an organization, that scout becomes very involved in the discussion.
Yeah.
Not the only person. You know, the major league coaching staff might have history with a player. Our player development staff might have history. We might consult the statistics that are out there to get a projection on a guy. But there's a lot of different pieces that come together. But those scouts that are out there specializing in different organizations are the ones we go to first.
And I apologize to the listeners if I ask this question of Bob Miller, but the player to be named later part of a trade, I've never how does that work? How do you say, all right, you'll give us a guy down the road and he better be pretty good or something?
Typically what it is it's a – it might be that you need to get a deal done. You're close to getting a deal done. You've narrowed it down to a small group of similar players. And the team that's getting the player wants a little more time to think about it. So you actually will give them a short list. And the player to be named later has to come off that list.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes a player can't be traded because of, you know, certain issues. And so... you know, you just have to wait until the end of the season for him technically to be traded. So sometimes we can figure it out based on
gotcha.
Who the team is.
There. Well, how'd you get into this? This is kind of the family business, baseball, for you.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's
well, sort of. It's kind of like a family hobby or business. I don't even know how you'd explain it.
That's a tough question to answer because a lot of the guys that I work with spent their – I mean, from when they were in high school and college, they were spending their summers working for baseball teams. They knew
from the moment
they came out of the womb that they were going to be involved in baseball, and they grew up eating, breathing, sleeping baseball. Bob Miller as well, those guys.
Yeah.
My background's different. I was an investment banker out of college and private equity, and I had, you know, finance and business in my background, and I got involved when my family got involved with the team back in 2006, and so I was lucky to find myself at the table, but... and I didn't deserve the job at the time, but hopefully I've been able to sort of, you know, earn my keep over time.
Well, I mean, business is a pretty big part of this.
This game has evolved, And I think you know, Walt and Bob and those guys that have a long history with it will tell you. I mean, we're playing with pretty big dollars now. But it's not just the money that's gotten bigger. The business side has gotten a lot more complex. The rules have gotten a lot more complex. And I think most importantly for us, the data that's become available about our sport and about our players and how they do what they do is growing at an exponential rate. And that's what makes this such a thrilling time to be a part of baseball.
Well, we've talked. I mean, you have that, for lack of a better term, a sabermetric bend. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is because of your math background and your business background, or is it just something that you've done reading up on and it makes sense to you? And I know the other part about this is we've talked and you say, I don't think people give us enough credit for what we do, and we like that. We like that we're kind of seen as a team that doesn't embrace this, but yet we do.
Right. No, you got a couple of different questions in there.
Yes,
but
I did.
I like where you're headed. having a finance background certainly helps in terms of sabermetrics, but I hope we're breaking down the barriers between the sabermetric world and the scouting world.
Well, don't you think in the business it is more broken down, like from the inside, than it is maybe on the outside?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. We've got a lot of scouts that are actually starting to embrace more statistics. They want to know.
Well, they've always spoken in numbers anyway.
And what I tell them is more often than not, this is proving what you've been telling us, but in the past you've had to tell everybody it's your gut feel. And now we can show people that what you're feeling in your gut is actually borne out over time, and we've got the numerical backup for it. And now what we're seeing is access to information that we never dreamed would be available. Information about a fielder and how far he goes to catch a ball, and how direct of a route he took to get to that ball, how fast the ball is coming off the bat, you know, from a hit. It's information that is, we don't even know what to do with it yet. So we're all trying to scratch our heads and figure out where we're going.
But this team does use a lot of that, probably more than you get credit for.
We're very comfortable with what we've got. We go to all the industry conferences. I mean, we talk to our colleagues at other teams. It's you know, that's the secret sauce. So nobody's giving up information on what they're doing, but there's enough out there that you can figure out who's on the same level with you. We deal with a lot of vendors in the industry, and a lot of times they're a great source of information, and we've had a lot of vendors tell us that, you know, our competitors are not looking at the same things we are.
That's what my question would be, is with all that information out there and everyone having access to it, how do you come up with a sort of proprietary blend, or is it more just you have a meeting with your people and decide what of those statistics matter most to your organization?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. I mean, a lot of people ask us, you know, or challenge us to find out what the other teams are doing. And my response has always been, as long as we're doing what Walt wants us doing, as long as we're providing information that's useful to him, as long as Brian Price is getting his questions answered, you know, why do I want to lose sleep over whether Joe Maddon does it differently? You know, right. I believe in Brian Price. I believe in Walt Jocketty. Our team is unified around that, you know, providing that information. So we're not so caught up in figuring out what the other guys are doing.
Does it make your job easier to have a manager that sort of embraces it a little bit more than maybe the prior one? Can you speak on that?
Well, we're providing the information.
What they do with it's up to them.
What they do with it's up to them. It's great that the coaches and the manager like to engage us in questions. They really are interested. And we've got that whole team of guys that I mentioned earlier. Rob Coughlin's down there in the trenches with them. And every time I'm down there, like earlier today, I mean, coach after coach walks in and asks them questions, projects for our interns, things to look at. And so our goal is just to, you know, give them whatever they can think of. And from time to time, we'll suggest some new ideas. We'll put new pages in the advanced scouting report, see how they like them, tweak them, again.
Yeah, you got a ton more interns this year, don't you?
No, we're not. It's getting harder and harder to get interns. It's not just our industry. It's every industry. The employment and labor laws, you know, make it very hard to accept free labor. You know, if people come work, you're required now to make sure they're paid. And they're worth what we pay them. So we have more, maybe not as many more as you think, but they're all paid interns. And, you know, our business is one of those.
Yeah, so take that, buddy.
I can't tell you how many times we get people that say, we'll come work for free.
Yeah,
just
I
to
hear
get
that
the
too.
Experience. And you have to turn them down because you're not allowed to accept that.
And yeah, those were the good old days, man. I had an unpaid intern once. It was the best.
So let's talk about the stuff that you do outside of Cincinnati. You were instrumental in moving spring training from Florida to Arizona. Is that true or not? I saw you wince. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. I thought I read that somewhere.
No, that's right. I'd like to say I was instrumental in trying to keep spring training in Florida because we were very happy there.
Oh, okay.
And we worked very hard to keep spring training in Sarasota. The Reds have a long history in Florida, and our fans, to be fair, the Midwest has a long history of going to Florida for vacation. I mean, there's just, we all have family down there or friends or a history of traveling down there. And so that was our goal. And we got so far as to agreeing with the city of Sarasota on a new lease that would have kept us in Sarasota for another 30 years. That was ultimately rejected by the voters of Sarasota in an amazingly close vote. It was like 100, literally 100 votes or something. And when we lost that vote, we had to look at alternatives. And so I took the lead on engaging the discussions. And going out to Arizona at the time made a lot of sense. It was really the only alternative that was provided, but we couldn't have scripted it better. The pros of being out in Arizona from a baseball operations perspective, I'm speaking selfishly from preparing the team for the season, you know, the weather, the proximity of the other teams, the condition of the facilities out there.
The happiness of the beat writers.
It made a lot of sense. It was very tough for the fans, and it was tough for me at home to explain to my wife why spring training was going west. So we didn't take the decision lightly. We think that the results over the last 4 years, while not solely attributable to the spring training move, you can't argue with the fact that we've had a lot of success the last 4 years since we've been preparing in Arizona. And we think that has something to do with it.
It's I'll just speak from a fan perspective. I've been twice. I went the first year you guys were there, and I went this year. And I never went to Florida, but I can't imagine anything being better than that weather and that ballpark and just the access to, like, every seat is, like, right on the field. I mean, it's an amazing facility, and then if you get a chance to take a tour of the practice facilities and stuff like that, which I was able to do, I was blown away. I recommend it for any fan to make it a point to go to Arizona in February or March because it's awesome.
Yeah, if you want to go for the beaches, you don't. But if you want to go if you want to go for beaches, you don't go to Arizona.
Yeah.
But if you want to go for baseball, it's so much better just because the long trips in Arizona are the short trips in Florida. And you could stay in Goodyear and have a game every day at that facility, be it the Reds or the Indians, and not even have to leave Goodyear. But
do you feel it's also gotten more fans that maybe are seeing the Reds team out west? You know?
Well, yeah, I think we've gotten a lot of fans that hadn't made the trip all the way to the east. You know, the fans that were on the West Coast and in the Northwest, I've met a lot of those that have enjoyed coming. And I do think more and more people from the Midwest are starting to, you know, to come out that way. You had a big group that still have family down in Florida, and they make that one trip in spring, and it's hard to make two. But over time, Arizona's become a much bigger retirement destination. You know, people love coming out there. I tell people I hope you get to take in spring training games because I think the whole atmosphere is different. Like you were saying, I think the seats are closer. You can see the guys' faces. They're signing more autographs. They're not in the season grind yet.
Right.
The practices are very fan friendly. You can walk right up and kind of, you know,
especially for the minor league guys.
Oh, that's the best.
I mean, Tucker Barnhart and all those guys, they were right there during batting practice. You could just walk up and there'd be 10 people watching batting practice. They'll come over and talk to you. Like, I loved it.
I saw, I think it was 2010. Might have been you or somebody just said, hey, watch this skinny kid run. And, you know, I was out on the back fields. A guy hits the ball to left center. And it's one of those things where you watch enough baseball, you just have the timing in your head. And I, you know, so I was watching the ball because it's kind of natural what you do. And then I look over to second to see him. And he's not there. I look to first. And he's not there. And I look to third and, like, no way he can be there. And he's sitting there standing up. And that
guy was Corky Miller.
He was running counterclockwise.
That guy was Corky Miller, yes. I mean, it was unbelievable. I was like, oh, that guy's really fast. And that was Billy Hamilton, and that was 2010. And since then, I've kind of, you know, I always make sure to spend a lot of times on those backfields. Watched Juan Duran just hit the ball a million miles out there.
Well, it's like, you know, buying Apple or Microsoft stock. Don't we all wish we'd found it way back when? You come out to spring training, and you follow these minor league guys, and it's great because early on, they love the fan attention, right?
Right.
They're not jaded, and they're not cynical.
That's so true.
They're craving it, and you get to know these guys, and you go watch them up in Dayton and talk to the guys. I hope people get the opportunity to meet them.
You know, and another thing, speaking of that, we talk about this. What do you have any hand in the draft? And if not, how does that kind of work? I mean, because that's coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, the draft, you know, really – the amateur scouting staff and the amount of work that they do leading up to the draft, it's all on them. I mean, they are out there watching players. So we have area scouts all over the country that are, there may be in a state like Texas, multiple area scouts. In a less populated area like the Northeast or the Pacific Northwest, you might have an area scout responsible for multiple states. But you'll have area scouts throughout the country watching players year-round. High school, college, and then we've got a series of cross-checkers. And their job is to go and see if the best guy in Michigan, how he compares to the best guy in Arizona, compares to the third best guy in Florida. And you know, that's a pretty daunting task. But we literally line all these guys up on a board after our scouts have seen them. And they come into Cincinnati.
How big is that board?
It's... It's as big as that bar without all the booze, you know? It's about that
size.
So
it's big but not as good.
Yeah, you're talking about, hundreds and hundreds of names.
Do you guys, I mean, is there a thing that's just like you go straight down who's still available, best case? Because, I mean, you can't really draft for need. This isn't the NFL.
The idea is to line them up the way you like them. And
yeah.
So starting with number one, and I mean, you're going down 30 players for the first round, second round, third round, for the 30 players all the way across this board. And Chris Buckley he spends 2 weeks lining that board up. He's talking to his scouts. He's asking the opinions of the guys in our front office, guys like, you know, Sam and Jeff and Nick. And I mean, you know, he gets everybody involved in voicing an opinion. Because he craves that information. He craves different perspectives. And then, you know, you get down to the 402nd player, and he's trying to separate him from the 403rd and 404th. Now, as you get deeper into the draft, typically the draft sort of takes care of itself. You know, your board starts disappearing. You pull the names down as the other teams pick them, and then what you're left with usually reveals itself. But those are still tough decisions.
Are you in that room that day?
Yeah,
those days.
I am. I keep my mouth shut, and I try to stay out of the way. If there's questions about, you know, how we're spending our draft pool, our allotment pool, you know, those are things that Bob Miller and I, you know, we're more likely to help on that end,
right?
Than we are trying to, you know, give them advice on where to pick an amateur player.
So your father is Joe Williams, who's one of the owners. And Tom Williams is your uncle. Is there any divide between ownership and management? And sometimes, is it tough for you?
No, you know, when I went to work there, neither my dad or my uncle are there full time. They're not there very often. And,
right.
You know, I have a very good working relationship with Bob Castellini. We've known him for a long time. I grew up with Phil. And, you know, it's just kind of about the work when I'm at work. We don't talk about the other stuff. I mean, we're just trying to be the best baseball team. You'd be surprised at how little that other stuff comes up.
Right.
I report to Walt, and that's the way I go about my business.
So you don't say, hey, come on, just pony up a little bit for Johnny Cueto. We're going to need a couple more dollars for Cueto to get him long term, right?
We're all lobbying for Bob Castellini to open that checkbook. You know, we're all in it together.
Is that checkbook having to get bigger every time he goes out there?
It for Johnny, he right now is putting himself in a very good position to secure a nice contract for his future. So we're rooting for Johnny.
Right, because that's such a weird thing in modern baseball. Guys like Johnny and Matt Latos, you're rooting for them to do well, but yet the better they do, the less likely they can help you in the future.
I'm way more worried about them doing well than I am about what they might cost. But the perfect scenario is when you find a guy like Johnny Cueto. Remember, everybody's talking about his next contract.
Right, his last one was...
We already got his last one, which was a fantastic contract. We got Jay Bruce, you know, on a fantastic contract. We picked some of these guys early and made some bets. And it's just great when those work out for the player and the team, because then we can root for him and not worry about what we're paying him.
And I guess some guys are different than others. Some guys want every last dollar, and then other guys are like, you know, I was talking to Jay Bruce today, and he's just like, it's like, I forget what we were talking about. It's just like, you know, there's enough money. You know, there's people who are really struggling out there, and we're not one of them.
You know, in my experience, some players are more worried about the money, and some players genuinely enjoy their circumstances. They enjoy where they're playing, their teammates, their coaches, and they have a higher threshold to switch. But I'll tell you, even in a lot of those cases where I thought that would give us the edge with the player, a lot of times the money won out. And it's not just the player and his agent. There's a lot of pressure from the industry on the player's side.
Homer talked about that the other day.
Yeah, you did. You heard Homer had some quotes about it. But they're getting a lot of pressure from the other players that if you settle, it's going to affect my ability to make a living. And that's unfortunate. Well, because they hear about it, and they just want to, you know, some of those guys just want to play for us.
Wow.
Now, we were talking before the show started. You're also very involved with the Reds Fantasy Camp out in Arizona. I have decided I'm going to go next year because everybody that I've talked to who's done it said I have to do it. What would you tell the listeners and those here tonight? Tell them exactly how many cool things you get to do with it and why it's worth it, because it's a little pricey, but
You know, the fantasy camp is something that would not have normally fallen within my job description. You know, it's not really truly part of baseball operations. But when we got here in 06, there was a camp. It was run by an outsider who paid the Reds a small fee in order to use the spring training facility. The Reds said, okay, but you can't go in any of the clubhouses. We want you out of here at a certain time. You can't use any of the current players or coaches. You can't wear any of our licensed, you know, uniforms. And we came.
That does not sound like a fantasy.
And it was a really passionate group of people that were huge Reds fans. And so I participated the first year. I went just to see what it was, and I realized that there was a lot of potential there. And so we've grown the camp. We've doubled the size of the participants, and I think the value proposition is way better. So you play for a whole week. You have two former Reds as your coaches for the week, and it's all authentic garb. We give them all sorts of nice gifts. We have great events at night. You know, the whole thing is put on a DVD, photos. We give them access to the training room. We have bull sessions, storytelling sessions, where we go in the Major League clubhouse. You take your picture in the lockers, and, you know, it's all sorts of great stuff. And we start our fantasy camp later than all the others. We intentionally end it right before Major League spring training starts. And the benefit is all our players have showed up early to start getting their work in, and they like mingling around and talking to the other guys.
But it actually starts in January, right? I mean,
it usually is the first week in February. Next year we're up against the Super Bowl is in Phoenix, so we have to do it a little earlier.
Okay.
And so because we have to do it a little earlier, we decided to you know, we're going to try to challenge the Cleveland Indians to a head-to-head, you know, have their fantasy camp teams. There's eight teams play our fantasy camp teams and have sort of a
So you're representing Cincinnati, Josh, this time in the Battle of Ohio.
Okay.
Do we get the Ohio Cup for the...
I'll tell you, these guys that have been going to this fantasy camp, and these guys take their game seriously. They love playing, and
what
they
is
love the humor.
What is the range of age of minimum, campers? And
minimum age 30, average age 50. I've seen them in their 70s out there, you know. It's a great bunch. And
women go as well?
Women do attend as well. We usually have two or three women, and we've had fun with that as well.
Do you videotape any of this?
They get their own locker room. Let me answer that question.
Can we get Josh? I want video of Josh that we can put up.
We've had celebrity guests in the past.
Why are you
so
guys
we'll be
laughing?
Ready for
You're
you.
Not supposed to laugh.
Mo Eggers come. Jeff Pecoro's come. We've had some fun over the last few years with...
And then don't you also at some point during the season get to play like a reunion game at the ballpark? Did I read that somewhere? Is that not true?
Yeah, you're like the walking brochure. I love it. Thank you for reminding me.
No, I want to get like this.
I'm sorry if I'm underselling it because I do. I love the camp and I talk about it all the time. So I'm not selling the whole experience. But in January, we actually have everybody that's going to be at the camp in February. We have them down, or maybe it's late December. I can't remember, late December, early January. We have them down to the ballpark. We hit in the cages. We take a tour of the Major League clubhouse. We tell them what to expect. They meet the trainers. We go in the weight room, and we get them ready, thinking about camp. Then we have them out to Goodyear for the week. We give them their own locker, their own uniforms. I mean, you know, the jackets, the Under Armour, everything. And then we have a week of games out there. We play against the pros. We have dinners every night. You get all your meals served to you. We have buses going back and forth to the hotel, so you don't need to drive if you don't want to. And then, like you were mentioning, you finish your week at camp. Come August, we invite you into town. There's a Sunday home game, and we introduce everybody on the field in front of all the fans right before the game. And then they come back on Monday on an off day, and they play on the field. And we don't just play on the field. I mean, we have the scoreboard turned on. We have the video cameras. We have Joe Zerhuizen doing the PA. We have, Pecoro announcing.
Boing.
It's legit. I'm in.
See, I think you are underselling it because when I found that part out, that was kind of I was like, oh, I get to play a great American. Like, that makes it even cooler. I don't know. All right.
And enough of our softballs. We're going to take a five-minute break if anybody needs to go to the bathroom. Then we're going to open up questions to the audience. We usually get several good ones. And the best one, I'm not sure who's going to determine the best question. The winner of whoever we determine to have the best question, and this might be a recurring theme the next couple weeks, thanks to Mr. Williams,
yep.
Who brought prizes.
The best question is not the hardest question, by the
way.
No.
If
somebody tries
to
stump me or stump us, that's not a winner.
This is a autographed baseball by Mr. Johnny Cueto.
Yep.
Who, this might date this podcast, but you see it, whatever, he threw another freaking
complete game
shutout today. The best pitcher in baseball at this point. If you ask a good question, you get this ball autographed by Johnny Cueto, even though you will have to convince your friends that this does indeed say Johnny Cueto.
there's an authentic sticker on the ball.
There is an authentic sticker on that. And, you know, Dick does have a roll of those in his office.
And for those listening at home or in their car right now, if you're jealous that you're not here with a chance to win this, we'll tell you. That next month, which is June 2nd, will be the next show. And then our show in July, we will also be giving out balls. One will be by Joe Morgan. One will be by Joey Votto, again, courtesy of Dick Williams. So now you have even more of an incentive to come to one of the shows the next 2 months if you weren't here tonight. So we'll take a quick break. We will be right back with more of the C-Dot Show. We are live at Motor Pub in Over the Rhine, downtown Cincinnati. Welcome back to the C-Dot Show, live from Motor Pub in Over the Rhine, presented by Enquirer Sports, sponsored by Cincy Shirts. Our guest this evening is the Reds Vice President of Baseball Operations, Dick Williams. And before we get to the questions from our audience, you also have a role in the Reds operations in the Dominican Republic. Is that correct?
We are in the process of moving to another facility adjacent to ours, and part of that process, we're building, constructing new facilities. And so I've been very involved in that, traveling down there along with Sam Grossman, who we mentioned several times tonight, and some of the other members of our team. But that's one of our ongoing projects. The Dominican Republic is of huge importance to us and our player development. But, yep.
I mean, guys that you guys have signed some pretty good players out of the Dominican. Johnny Cueto would be one of them. How important and how much tougher is it to identify these guys and to bring them into the fold than it is the Americans? Because you have to do some different work, and you kind of almost have to be on the ground a little bit more than you do in the U.S.
You're signing them at a younger age, I think, is probably one of the biggest differences.
There's more risk.
You're signing them at 16 instead of out of high school or out of college. And while they love baseball and they play a lot of baseball, the facilities they have available to them and the competition is not the same. So when kids grow up in the Dominican, they're playing, they're training, they're practicing. They might have a guy in the neighborhood that has three or four players under his wing where he takes them out and hits some ground balls. But they don't have enough. They're not fielding games. They don't have Little League. They don't have scholastic baseball. You know, we take that for granted. But they are all about. They're very interested in the sport. They love it. They're passionate about it. But unlike soccer, they can't just throw a game together very easily.
Right.
So these players tend to gravitate towards what we call buscones, which is a term of art for, sort of a trainer that'll take these kids and they'll say to the family, look, I'll feed this kid, I'll nourish him, I'll train him, I'll teach him to play baseball, and I'll give him his best shot at getting a contract. If and when he does, you'll owe me something, some portion of that contract, but the risk is on me in the interim. And so these players will go to those guys because they'll aggregate enough players to get a field and have a game and at least begin the process of training to play baseball. But it's a very different path than the American players take. And so the scouting is very different.
What does it mean for a team to be down there and have an academy? Is it that only after you sign them that they're in your academy?
That's right. So all 30 major league teams have a presence in the Dominican. And really, very few other places in the world do the 30 major league teams have a presence.
Right.
The Dominican is really the jumping off point for all the Latin players, whether they're, Venezuelan, Colombian. There's, even some South American. They'll tend to be brought there and trained there. The Dominican's close to the United States. It's relatively politically stable, and they've got probably the deepest tradition of baseball, the most advanced. So we tend to bring our players there. There have been teams in the past that have had academies in Venezuela, but the political instability there has scared a lot of people off. We still have a scouting presence, and we use native Venezuelans. And if they find a player for us, the goal is to sign them and get them somewhere else where we can get our hands on them to train them. So there are a few teams left down in Venezuela, but not many. And I think the Rays went to Brazil and haven't heard of any players coming out of there yet.
John Hamm went to India.
Yeah. And those pitchers are still in the minor league. That the part of the story that'll be told later, I'm sure. But when people talk about Latin players, that's 20% of the major leagues right now. 20% is just Venezuelan and Dominican, a little higher when you add Puerto Rico and Colombia and some of the other countries. But they account for almost 35 to 40% of the new signings every year. And that's because, just a numbers game, because we're signing young kids down there to fill out the rosters.
Do you, feed and educate them, too? Or?
We do. We bring them into an academy, and they're there. The academy's closed a couple months a year, but the rest of the time they're there training. There's an organized Dominican Summer League. And to MLB's credit, they've taken an increased interest the last few years in making sure that the conditions of those academies is upgraded. and that the education provided is as good as possible. So we took the lead this last year. We're one of the first teams to jump in a new MLB pilot program that's ramping up the education in English and math and classes we were already teaching at a rudimentary level, but we're taking it to another level, trying to get these kids the skills that they need, because the failure rate is incredibly high down there.
Yeah.
And if you do have a player succeed, the transition to the United States is infinitely easier if they have some rudimentary English, they have some rudimentary math skills. I mean, you can't imagine leaving, you know, at age 16, 2 years before you leave for college, and going to a country where they speak another language and trying to play a sport for a living. It's just right. A really lot to ask.
Did you
ask.
Ever see the movie Sugar?
I did. It's fascinating.
I mean, it's pretty good, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I've always wanted to, like, talk to, like, a Dominican guy and see, like, if they could watch it and see how accurate it is.
Very good. It's very good.
All right. Well, very cool. Next, if I know we have some questions, Ian, let's go.
This is a two-part question. Number one, how terrible is the pitcher win-loss stat? And number two, 1.25 ERA. Bleacher Report has now named him the no-brainer Cy Young candidate. How good is Johnny Cueto?
Both.
There should be more applause for that.
Both very good questions.
Should be more applause for that.
Both very good questions. He's trying to get that Cueto ball.
Yes. It's not going to be based on the ball.
What?
I like
you
how
know
you
what?
Snuck
wait,
a two-parter
I'm
Johnny in there.
Cueto. Two-parter. I don't need a ball. I got a Jay Bruce ball. Jay Bruce is amazing. I'd love a Johnny Cueto ball. But this guy has pitched like a monster almost his entire adult career.
Like a monster and who's good at pitching.
I think the last time the guy had an ERA above 3 was 2010, I think.
It was 20,
and it was like 3.6.
I think it was.
He's
I'm
been
not
below
100%
three,
sure.
Three
I don't know. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I think it was 2009, honestly.
Yeah, because since 2010, I did look up like ERA plus. He was second in the National League from 2010
I mean,
to now.
I mean, the dude is amazing. Also, not trying to be.
Hey, are you asking or answering?
Three-part question.
I don't know. Not
I'm waiting
to
for him
crazy,
to rip off his mask like he's the Johnny Cueto
his
agent.
His hair is amazing. Like I don't have any hair, and I wish I could have hair like that. I love him. He's amazing. It's,
he's
I don't know if that's a question. I don't know. If
I'll
that's
tell
a
you
question.
What. His teammates love him. He's a fighter on the mound. You know, he is just like what you think a guy with that kind of record would be like. He prepares very diligently. His work ethic is very high. He's big on running. He runs a ton. That was one of the things Dusty.
First base.
I think Dusty got him doing was. A lot of running between starts, you know, to strengthen his lower body, and it made a difference in his skills. I still remember when he was in the minor leagues before he'd pitched a big league inning, and we were down in Sarasota on the backfields, and he threw to Adam Dunn and Griffey. They were in the same group, and those guys both came out of there and said, this guy's nasty. He will be an excellent big league pitcher. And they saw it way back then. So he had it all along. And he's only gotten better. I mean, we take it for granted. I talked to Brian after the game today, and Brian was like, he wasn't as sharp as he's been. I was like, where have you raised your standards to, Brian? I mean, they're like, you've got him way up here. I mean, that was pretty sweet. And he said, he just makes the pitches when he has to, no matter how, you know, sharp he is on a given day. But that guy is a leader. He's a guy I'd love to get signed. I can hear the clock ticking every time he takes the mound. But he'd make a great teammate for a long time. Good question on him. All right. One loss record. Yeah, I wouldn't say terrible. It's certainly too basic. You know, there's too many variables that go into a win and a loss to just sort of hang that one number on a pitcher on a given day. But I wouldn't ignore it either. I talk to a lot of those position players, and they really feel like when they play behind a certain guy and he's pitching a certain way, they raise their game all the way around. They want to play better defense for him. They want to play better offense. And so I would say that the pitcher does have influence on more than just, you know, the delivery of the ball to the plate. He does get some credit for getting his teammates, you know, to have the confidence to win. And that's part of the fun of sabermetrics, is we now can try to quantify some of that, you know, and the influence that a guy like Johnny Cueto can have on the defense and the offense just based on the way he's pitching. Thanks for the question.
All right. We got another one?
To lower that. So you mentioned earlier, sometimes you just have to ask when it comes to trades, where you're sitting around talking about, you know, what's possible, what's not, and sometimes you think that you may overvalue someone, they may undervalue, et cetera. And you mentioned that that happens from time to time. You call, you ask, and you find out that you're pleasantly surprised that you got what you wanted or even more than what you wanted. Can you give us an example of a trade that worked out in the Reds' favor like that?
Yeah, we're starting to venture into territory that's a little, you know, a little tough to speak freely about, you know, the conversations that go on behind the scenes. But I would say, you know, anytime you can find a trade where in the off season, where you're not preying on a you know, an injury situation or something that's of dire need, when you get in the off season and you can really line up the teams and talk about strengths and weaknesses. You know, a few years ago, we knew that we had all the parts to win, but we wanted another starting pitcher. You know, we set our sights on a starting pitcher. That's the kind of plan you need to have in the offseason to sort of make it happen. And you can't waver from that, from wanting that. And Walt, you know, was convinced that we were one starting pitcher away. So we set our sights on a very short list of people, and Latos was one of them. And we did everything in our power to figure out what kind of pieces they would need, where they were in their cycle. And so before we ever had our first conversation with them, we had that trade, you know, very far along in our minds. We had a very fair proposal worked out. And I think, you know, that's part of the reason it moved so quickly, was because it wasn't an unreasonable ask in either direction.
And that dates back to even, sorry to interrupt, that dates back to even the Josh Hamilton trade that puts you in position to make the trade for Latos by getting Volquez, right? Because he was the main piece of that trade to the Padres.
Yeah.
Yes, no?
I wouldn't call him the main piece.
He was the one that was ready.
That was one of the hardest trades to make, just because the easy trades to make are the ones
Latos
everybody
and
wants you to make.
Or Volquez and Hamilton.
Making the Hamilton trade was real tough. Because it's easy to trade guys when they're down. You know, everybody wants to get rid of the guy that's not hot. And the key is to sell high in this game. And because that's when you have the best chance of unloading an overvalued asset. But the way fan sentiment works, and all of us, you know, you get down on a guy and you want to trade him. Josh Hamilton wasn't a guy we were down on. We just had a different perspective on what, you know, his future was going to look like than they did, and we valued starting pitching at that time more based on the other players we had on the roster. But the, you know, Latos one was a good one, and then we went into the next offseason. Again, it was a very simple plan. It was upgrade the on-base percentage and leadoff hitting, because that was the one thing that held us back the year before in 2012. And so Chu was a guy that when we created a filter, it was a very short list. And Chu was a guy that was hard to get in a trade, but it made a lot of sense for both sides at the time.
All right, thanks.
When we hear about a trade that's close to happening and doesn't, or a signing that's close to happening and doesn't, obviously we don't have any idea other than speculation of how close it was. But like a Grady Sizemore or somebody like that, that, you know, all the rumors, he's this close to being a Red, and then he's not, and then he ends up doing well in Boston. Are there times where you wish you'd pulled the trigger or you know, realize, oh, if we would have given him a little more, then we probably could have had that person? I mean, is hindsight a big part of this, or do you just say, well,
man,
it didn't make sense at the time?
The hindsight will eat you alive if you let it. You know, there's so many ways to second guess our game, and that's what's beautiful about it. You watch a game and you can second guess, you know, almost every decision that's made. And it's the same with trades. A lot of them are outside of our control. You know, you want to sign a guy, you think you've got him signed, and he has a change of heart. Sometimes it's a medical condition that you didn't know about when you agreed to the deal. Sometimes the other team gets cold feet at the last second. You know, we've been fortunate. Most of the big trades we targeted the last few years worked out. I can't think of a big one that didn't. You know, we were hopeful to get Grady Sizemore as an extra player, but, you know, I Skip Schumacher and Brian Peña and some, I can't say enough good things about some of the extra guys we ended
absolutely.
Up with. So, feel pretty lucky.
All right, let's go. What you got?
So, I've been thinking about this one for a while, and I'd pick Roger Bernardina. But which Reds player do you think most deserves to have a hot dog named after him, and why?
Let's see. Which one most deserves a hot dog? How can you not
named after
put Brandon Phillips in that category? I mean, the guy is he's just such a—he embraces being a hot dog. I mean, when I think hot dog, Brandon comes to mind for me. I don't know if his name lends itself to a particular style of Frankfurter, but, you know— I'll let the creative minds to my right and left work on that.
You should pick the pitcher with the highest ERA because he's the worst. The worst. Okay, next question. No.
That's the professional
comedian. That's a
great
question.
He was angling for a Cueto ball.
You guys were talking about the Dominican and you know, our new facility down there. And I've heard something about the international draft possibly impacting the development of players down there. If that were implemented, do you think major league teams are going to depart the Dominican? Something like the agents and the Buscones are saying it could, could happen.
Would the team? I'm sorry, I missed the end of it. Would the
I mean, if an international draft is implemented, are major league teams going to abandon the facilities they have down there and the development processes they have?
I don't know. That's a good question. A lot of it would depend on if the signing age changed, I believe. If you raised the signing age, which is something I personally would support, you know, then I think you could bring them over right away. I don't know that we're going to see that, though. You know, they're trying to get the money as early as they can, the players and the Buscones over there. And as long as you're signing them that young, I don't think taking them away from their native country at such a young age, unless you've got a really exceptional player, you know, makes a lot of sense. It'll change some of the way that we do business. I mean, the you know, the Buscones down there have benefited greatly from the fact that effectively those players are free agents, and so they make a lot of money off of that. We've taken one step towards controlling the costs down there, which is we now get these bonus pools that we're allowed to spend. That's sort of a soft cap because a team can arbitrarily blow past that limit and just pay a fine. And we've seen teams, the Tampa Bay Rays did that in a big way just a year ago. So teams are still spending what they want. It just becomes a little more expensive. But it's helped. And if you go to the draft, it'll help even more. We find it to be it would be quite challenging to integrate the international baseball community in with our draft. Just the nature of registering all those players and finding out their, you know, verifying ages and doing all that, and then cross-checking them. You know, that's what I talked about earlier for an amateur scout. You know, to rank relative players around the country is a really tough thing to get done in a very short window of time. The spring baseball, you know, doesn't get going until it warms up, right? And the draft is in like 2 weeks. So they don't have a lot of chance to see these players around the country. Now imagine if they're trying to compare all the Dominican players and the Venezuelan players at the same time to the same pool. And it becomes, you know, a really daunting challenge. So I'll be interested to see. The MLB sure seems committed to bringing a draft in. We just all think the logistics are going to be tough.
Hi. I was wondering, the TV money that's kind of come into baseball lately has really changed that, whether it's the Dodgers, you know, their crazy deal, or even, you know, in our market. Do you guys, I mean, how does that factor into your long-term thinking for payroll? Do you think of it as like a a bubble that may burst someday, or sort of like the NFL, it just seems to just keep escalating, or will it become, you know, you just have the different markets just make proportionally way more money, and so it doesn't end up affecting things long term?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. It's certainly, we have seen incredible growth the last few years, and you wonder how long that's sustainable. The way we view it, our business model is to break even every year. You know, we're not in the business to lose money, but we're not in the business. There are teams out there. I don't know if that was serious applause or applause, but there are teams out there that put money in their pocket, and thank you if it was serious. But we're trying to put everything we can back on the field. I showed our ownership group some slides during spring training about the investment we've made in the team, and we've grown our spending on baseball operations, over $70 million since 2006. 92% of that growth has gone into player payroll, amateur signings, and the coaching staff, the on-field operations. We have not grown spending on, the front office, on, all the other things that sit behind it. We're not spending more on travel. We're not spending more on entertainment, any of that. It's all going, every incremental dollar, 91 cents has gone into the product on the field. And, that's what it's all about. And so if we make more money, we'll put it back into payroll. I sort of feel like, we're close to the end of a media contract. We've got a few years left, and we hope that that's an opportunity to increase revenue, which would be money we'd invest in the team. But we sort of feel like we're just keeping pace. We're just trying to keep up with some of these other teams, and it's a little bit of a losing battle. So we're excited about the opportunity to have a new media contract and some other sources of incremental revenue. But, we don't know that it'll change our spot in the relative rankings.
All right, last question.
What we got here?
Yeah, I was just wondering, how hard is it, what's the hardest part about your job, and how hard is it to get a job on the business side of things of baseball? Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that's a good question. About just getting into the business, the best part of the business, I don't know if I'd say the hardest, but the best part of the business and the worst part of the business are the same thing, and that's the public awareness of the industry, and the team. It's so gratifying to be able to discuss the business and what we do every day with people. You're in the grocery store and you strike up a casual conversation. It's really fun to be able to talk about what you do with people all the time. That's also, the worst part, because when things aren't going well, it's all out there in the public every day, and it affects all of our moods, and you hear about it. And so that's that can be the best and the worst part. Getting into the business, I think if you're interested, there are so many ways to get into baseball. There are minor league teams all across this country, and they're always looking for, people to get interested in and take a role. There's a great conference every year at the when we have the winter meetings once a year, the industry meetings. Every single independent league, every single minor league, every single major league team is together under one roof with all of the vendors that sell all the products to us. With all the media, everybody under one roof. And if you arrive at that thing with a stack of 100 resumes, you'll get 100 interviews. But there's a website called PBEO.org, Professional Baseball Employment Organization, and it might be .com, but PBEO, and all the jobs throughout the industry are posted there. You can sort them by geography or area of interest. That's a fantastic resource, so.
Awesome.
That's very cool.
Well, thanks again for everybody for showing up. Dick Williams, most especially. It's been wide-ranging, very informative, fun conversation, as always.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Now, you are not on Twitter, that's correct, or in a baseball capacity you're not on Twitter?
I don't opine on any baseball matters online. I'll let our players we got enough players talking on Twitter.
Very cool. You can follow Trent on Twitter.
At CTrent.
Be sure to follow at Inquirer and Inquirer Sports. I am at Josh Sneed on Twitter.
We'll be back here June 2nd.
June 2nd here at Motor Pub. How about a round of applause for everybody at Motor Pub, as always, doing a great job hosting this show.
We got to give away the baseball.
We're going to give away a baseball here. We'll let the listeners at home go, and we'll figure out who wins the baseball. And if anybody has a couple more questions, we always like to reward folks for coming out to the show
with
some answers. Okay. We'll figure it out. So, again, thank you to those who are listening at home. Thank you to those who have shown up. Thank you to our guest, Dick Williams. On behalf of my co-host, Trent Rosecrans, this has been the CDOT Show presented by Inquirer Sports. We'll see you next month, you guys. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thank you so much.